Blog Talk Radio.
Another rain shortened rain. What word am I looking for? Another rain tampered weekend, right, Miss Lee? If you need rain in your area, all you got to do is call NASCAR.
It's the vortex theory, I'm telling you.
No, that's called Mother Nature not liking us Northeastern people, because we've been getting nailed with rain almost every day in the last like 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because obviously there has been a lot of rain that's been hitting the East Coast, so much to the fact that it's actually hampered an upcoming race this week at Thunder Road Raceway. Is that correct, Taz Taylor? The SRX series is already announced.
Thunder Road Speed Bowl. We could say the news already and jump into this series if we want. SRX announced last Thursday, due to the heavy amount of rain and flooding that's happened in the state of Vermont and other places in the Northeast, SRX, the governor of Vermont, and the Thunder Road Speed Bowl track promoter, owner, have all agreed to pull the plug on SRX at Thunder Road, and they have guaranteed an SRX race at that same track for next year to make up for this year's loss. So we know one race for next year, for sure. But that, with that being said, if Stafford has opened up the doors to SRX to race there one more time this week before SRX heads to Virginia for Motor Mile Speedway.
Yeah, so Stafford's going to get a doubleheader in this short 6-week SRX series. Stats that we were looking for in viewership. I know a lot of us were excited that ESPN was going to carry this into the next dimension. It was good to have Alan Bestwick back in the booth. I think that's some familiarity. Y'all bear with me, guys. I'm dealing with maybe a little bit of too much heat today. Where the Northeast is dealing with a lot of rain, we're dealing with extreme heat. and I think it's kind of gotten the best of me today. So if I sound slurred or I actually have to take a break for a second or something like that, it's just it's what happens. We got back from the mountains. I felt great, but today has kind of beat the hell out of me, so to speak. So just bear with me, and we'll make a show of it. But definitely with Stafford stepping up there, you know, it's unfortunate, Taz, because, you know, a lot of money was spent on this event. You know, anytime a promoter brings in a major series, and especially one with a national television crew such as ESPN coming into their racetrack, all the advertisements and all that lay on the responsibilities of the racetrack, and unfortunately all that is lost, from the improvements made to the speedway to the radio advertisements spent. You know, it's good to know that SRX is going to keep them in the loop for next season, but it's just unfortunate over how much the actual town and speedway,
well,
how much, you know, how much they're going to have to cough up for this situation.
Well, there's a couple of downfalls to this. Obviously, the people in Vermont or people that planned on traveling to this track basically lost out on this opportunity. The only downfall on this, too, and he is very he's been very vocal about it on Twitter, if you haven't noticed. The Godfather, Mr. Moody, he's like I said, he's been vocal about it on Twitter, and he's not entirely pleased. He feels like Vermont got robbed. He was supposed to even make a guest appearance at the track. I don't remember what he was supposed to do, but, yeah, he was supposed to make it a guest appearance at Thunder Road, and maybe that had to take a toll on it. I don't know, but he's not entirely pleased, but show must go on. But, I mean, what can you do in a bunch of weeks' time with as much as
it's a big move by the SRX series to be able to come in and make that kind of move and make that statement. But, I mean, at the same time, if you're going into a destruction area, you know, you have to do what's best for the series. And, you know, maybe they learned something from NASCAR a few years ago when we couldn't go to certain places and certain tracks, that, hey, the event must go on. It's just sometimes there may be a change of revenue, so or a change of
venue.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Thank you so much.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, seriously, what were they supposed to do? I mean, the place got, what was it, a 1-in-1,000-year flood? I mean, there are people that have lost their homes, their livelihoods, and everything else. And so, yeah, you know, it's an inconvenience for some people that the race isn't going to be there. But, you know, the series had to do what they had to do so they could continue on. But I think that they were being respectful of the people of Vermont and promising them that they would go next year there. I think that was, you know, the best that they could do for them under the circumstances.
Right.
You know,
they should
contribute to a charitable fund, a little bit of money to a charitable fund or something too. But, you know, I mean, as far as from a procedural standpoint, I think what they did was perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, they had to go the extra mile when not only did they have to reach out to the track, but they reached out to the governor of Vermont to make things happen and work out. And like I said, I'm glad they made up. You know what? It sucks that they pulled the plug, because I was actually looking forward to see one of the shortest tracks on the schedule this year, because we know the shorter the track, the better racing we get. But, I mean, look at Slinger in comparison to Thunder Road.
Right. Well, I definitely feel like the reason, you know, I know we started things off with SRX, and we normally start things off with NASCAR, but I'll be real honest with you, the SRX series is actually more entertaining this weekend than the NASCAR race, especially from the Cup Series side. I mean, it was basically dominated by MTJ, and that's a good thing, like, right? We're seeing a guy who's you know, maybe was off last year, was one of the big three there for a few years, kind of fizzled off, went through some personal stuff, and now he's on his way back to the top. And we talked, you know, on this show recently that Martin Truex Jr. was on fire, and he was headed to the top of the list. And we carried other names like Brad Keselowski. And, you know, once again, guys, this is like 7 weeks in a row that we're going to be able to talk about RFK Racing tonight. You know, and it's not – we're not just plugging them in to talk about them because we want to make RFK – they are literally making the headlines. I mean, Brad Keselowski, well, another top five finish.
Well, Chris, I'm gonna nab on that because we're going to blend – if we're going to transition here, I'm going to blend the two series here. We obviously had Hamlin, Keselowski, Harvick, just to name a few of the current Cup guys racing, or that raced in Stafford, that raced in New Hampshire. Obviously, those three guys have had their own share of success in New Hampshire. But if you look at those, if you look at two of those three guys, right, Harvick and Hamlin, I'm personally circling. Those two guys have really good success at the low bank flat track type racing or tracks or whatever. Unfortunately, Harvick did not get the good end of the stick at Stafford, but it obviously showed with Hamlin because he marched his way through the field like it was nothing. Not once,
right,
or twice.
Right.
And obviously New Hampshire, you know, he has his own success there, and I think running Stafford obviously showed there. And with you mentioning Brad getting a top five, he mentioned that he's running SRX full time this year because there's a lack of track time with really no practice, and so he took advantage of the situation. And look what he benefited out of by running Stafford.
Right.
I mean, granted Stafford may be a little bit more banked than New Hampshire and a lot smaller, but, I mean, it's still the same layout pretty much.
You know, I hear a lot about this. And, you know, we used to connect practice time with Xfinity Series and drivers racing the cars within the NASCAR Series. And mostly at the track that they're going to race in the Cup Series. So it's really hard to really figure out, are they really getting what advantages do they have for running someplace like a Stafford on the same weekend as a Cup race? And, you know, honestly, it's just, I guess, the best thing of it is it's seat time, right? And they go through the motions of being a race car driver. When you're out of the car for 5 days out of the week, and then you get in, it's quite an adjustment. Trust me, as a local track announcer, the worst thing in the world is we only race every 2 weeks. So if we have a rain out, well, it's a month before I'm back in my seat again. So, you know, you have to know when to turn it on and when to turn it off. And a lot of times, I guess, you know, that's what these guys are calling an advantage by being able to get more seat time. It's not that the driving ability of the car can transfer over. It's not any notes from, you know, setups or anything like that that can be transferred. It has to just be the driver cockpit type thing where, you know, a driver's going to do certain things while he's in the – Yes, Miss Lee, please carry this along.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, a simulator can only go so far. And so, you know, yeah, spending time in the simulator, especially, you know, if it's a track that you're not familiar with or whatever, you know, it is a good thing. But you're right, that seat time, it's your reaction time. It doesn't matter if the cars are the same or not. It's your, you know, being able to, it's that muscle memory kind of thing. Your reaction times, your braking times, your gas, you know, how you clutch, whatever. That's, you know, that's muscle memory. So that, you know, a simulator is not quite going to cut it where getting as much seat time as you can is, you know, important to a lot of these guys.
I have to make, I had to laugh when you mentioned the whole break thing because I was watching bits and pieces of Haley Deegan's little vlog on her YouTube of her race at Stafford. And at the end, she was talking to some of the drivers, like Ken Trader, which she said Ken Trader's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, ever. And then she was talking to one or two other drivers, and one of them was Brad Keselowski. And Brad literally said that he lost brakes at the end of that race, and he was glad it ended early because of that reason. And the best part was he said he wasn't even using brakes.
They were some glowing rotors, my friend. There was some glowing rotors out there. I was like, dang, these things are glowing about like the damn NASCAR rotors are. I mean, they were. So, yeah, I mean.
And I'm surprised. There was a couple I was surprised with, Tony Kanaan especially, because, I mean, Kanaan ran Stafford. I know the first year he did. I don't remember last year if he did or not. I want to say no, but I could be wrong on that. But he, but like with him running SRX and especially the Brazil, stock car series that he's in or whatever, you would think he knows how to manage his brakes without having them glow so bad.
Honestly, I think it was something in the brake package that they're using there, and they'll probably, look at that, before they come back to Stafford. That's, you know, one of those deals where, you know, of course, they're race cars, and they're going to find the weakest point of the car in a race. And, you know, it wasn't just one blower. It was basically the whole field of cars. They were all, you know, pretty much glowing on their rotors. So you'll probably see a little tweak in there, maybe a fan or something, a brake fan introduced or something like that. The greatest thing about what I like about the SRX series so far is that it is an equal playing field amongst cars. If one car gets something, they all get something. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they play that as we go to a redo, basically, of last week at Stafford, and whether or not they'll maybe do something that keeps those brakes from overheating so fast. Because as you said, Ed, it was just then heating up. Like, we didn't get the race that we were expecting because it just ended so abruptly. I feel like things were just then, you know, getting good.
Yeah, I kind of expected. I knew it was going to come. It was just a matter of when. I mean, obviously, with me being in New York, with how weather travels from west to east, I knew it was just a matter of time of when it was going to come. And I was surprised that they tried keeping going for as long as they did, because there was a couple flashes I did see in the background. But that one big flash where you clearly saw that lightning strike, I knew they were going to call it right there, because, I mean, as soon as I saw that strike, I was like, yep, that's it. And about 2 seconds later, that's when they threw the yellow, and that was basically the end of the race. And like I said, I knew it was coming because we had that same storm too.
Yeah. You know, you can get away with a lot at your local short track, but when you have ESPN in there and you have all this attention on it, you have to make the best decision possible. And that decision is going to keep you from getting sued. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it ended early. I feel like it was kind of running behind anyway. And, you know, the start time is maybe an issue, but it seems like we're just never happy anyway as race fans. So you guys are from the East Coast. It's a Thursday night. It's 9 o'clock before it even comes on. Did that hinder what you were going to do for that evening? I would like, you know, I'm on the central time zone. So 8 o'clock is not that bad. 10 o'clock, the news comes on and everybody goes to bed. But 11 o'clock, you know, I very rarely do get to see the end of an NFL game on Monday night, because it ends at somewhere between 10:30 and 11 o'clock. How did that affect y'all being – is that going to affect y'all being able to watch the SRX on a Thursday night?
Well, for me, it's not a problem because I am generally off on Fridays. So, you know, if it should run into overtime or whatever, that's not a problem for me. I run into that problem more with truck races on a Friday night because I have to get up and go to work Saturday morning. So for me personally, it's not an issue. But, yeah, I can see where it would be. And if we look back at the viewership statistics
right.
from Adam Stern retweeted a guy by the name of Austin Karp, said the debut of SRX Racing on ESPN on Thursday, 395,000 viewers, tough weather, delays led to the end of the race kind of getting cut off, obviously well below what CBS was drawing in 2022 and 2021. Well, you've got two issues here. You've got it Thursday night. I'm going to say three issues. You've got it on a Thursday night. You've got the late start time, which, you know, does affect us East Coast people. And then you're looking at a cable channel versus an over-the-air channel. So those are the three things that I see affecting the viewership numbers. It'll be interesting to see after another couple of weeks whether or not those numbers go up, which hopefully they do. But, you know, like I said, for me personally, the starting time and the day doesn't make that much difference. But for people that work, you know, Monday through Friday, obviously it can be an issue.
Yeah, it is interesting that you bring up the fact that it's not on over-the-air television. And I've always kind of been like, well, everybody has cable. Everybody has cable. But I think the one thing that I always miss is if you're not, there are many channels on cable that you don't even look at. Like, you just, even if you flip through them, some of them you flip through even faster. I do that with every Hallmark and Lifetime channel.
Right.
Guaranteed.
Right.
I'm just going to haul ass through that section of stuff because there's nothing there that's going to appease me. There's nothing there. So being on CBS, which is over the air network, there is something more about that I really, you know, it has to be relevant that people tune in more to a privileged station like CBS or ABC, NBC versus an ESPN, right? Because if you're not an ESPN fan, you're not going to be surfing to see what's on ESPN. But if you are looking for your favorite typical show that comes on CBS on a Saturday night, so you're going to be, you know, maybe you're looking for The Voice or something like that, and then you run across it. I see how it brings in a bigger audience. You know, I've never really understood that with NASCAR because they say, oh, well, it skips around in the channels, and it's the reason why the viewership. Look, I grew up in an age where you didn't know if it was going to be on TBS, TNT, but you found the damn race. But I guess in this day and age where there's so much other things, being put on an ESPN isn't healthy for this type of series. You want the biggest audience, and you're basically secluding yourself to only sports fans when you put it on ESPN. Now, if this is on ABC, I think that we would be looking at it completely different. But since it's on ESPN,
exactly.
Let me say something. There's a lot of race fans that have boycotted ESPN because of you know, their wokeness. And of course, they don't cover NASCAR.
Exactly. That and the whole issue with, you know, that went on with between them and NASCAR. But let me just share this with you, okay? I don't have cable. I refuse to pay for it, especially today, you know, when you can stream things. So I get Sling. Okay, I use Sling, and I subscribe to Sling Blue, okay, and when Fox has the races, I have to add their sports package so that I can get FX or Fox Sports 2 because of some of the races and some of the stuff being covered on that. Okay.
Right.
So when NBC picks up the races, I'm okay with Sling, but I also have to have Peacock for some things as well. But then now with SRX being on ESPN for this short 6-week season, I had dropped the sports extra because Fox Sports 2 wasn't necessary anymore. But now I had to pick up Fox Blue or Sling Blue plus Sling Orange so I could get ESPN so I could watch the SRX races. So it's a game. And how many NASCAR fans really want to do that?
Right. And
you
know,
everybody complained about. Remember when NBC had the Olympics?
Yes.
And how NASCAR races were getting punted to CNBC and USA and all kinds of obscure channels. Man, people raised a fit about that.
Right.
Because if they weren't part of your cable package or your streaming package, whatever it may be, you know, you were out of luck. So,
right.
You know, you raise a good point, Chris. I understand the reasoning behind going with ESPN and bringing back Thursday Night Thunder, but yeah, ABC might have been a better venue. But then again, I don't watch a lot of television, so I don't know what their Thursday night lineup is and whatever regular shows people might, you know, be expecting. So I don't know if they were willing to disrupt their regular viewership. But we'll see how it plays out.
Well, honestly, I feel like the ESPN dipping their toes back in the water. They want to see if they can attract that fan base again, because the reason for their leaving last time was viewership and the cost of production versus the viewership. You know, ESPN's gone a little bit of a different direction over the last 10 years, being bought by Disney. They were also in the mix to buy WWE. You know, their name's been kicked around and buying a lot of different venues and sports, including NASCAR. I believe even including NASCAR. As I said, I think that it's, you know, just a dipping of the toes to see if they can get the fan base back over that way. I would love to see it on ABC because I really do believe that this series is best fit for over-the-air airways. And there's so many, you know, there's like CW and all these others that are free channels. If you're going to go throw it over, like you said, Ms. Lee, over on a CNBC or a USA, please, let's use one of these other free over-the-airwave channels that, you know, play Gunsmoke all day long. You know, I mean, there are other places that you could put this if you're just going to, you know, say, hey, we're going to make sure it's over-the-airwaves and more accessible to the public. Because as you said, Ms. Lee, some people are just not going to go changing their cable, and I put that in parentheses, cable package or streaming package just for a 6-week race series. Taz,
right.
What are your thoughts?
Unless you're a diehard like me.
Like us, right. Like me, right, exactly. But you have those at will, and that was the 200,000 that was actually watching. But nowhere near the numbers that we've seen in the inception. And then last year, you know, it's kind of a downward trend now, it feels like. Taz, let's continue the subject.
I did expect the viewership numbers to drop a little bit because CBS was drawing in 1 million viewers on average in each of the 6 weeks for the 2 years. But I didn't expect the viewership to drop that much. And I agree with Ms. Lee. I mean, you have to sit here and adjust. If you don't have the special sports package or whatever, you pretty much have to upgrade your streaming package or cable package, whatever it is, in order to get it. And the thing with ESPN, I'm giving them a shot, and they're at least trying new waters. They had to adjust because of, yeah, they did have a 3-year deal with CBS, but when they tried this Thursday Night Thunder out, they had to go somewhere else because CBS told them, we can't lose our primetime shows on Thursday night. That was their main struggle. They wanted to keep SRX, but Thursdays were just not going to work. So SRX had to adjust, which CBS understood. And unfortunately, it had to go down that route. And it just... And the only problem with ESPN, too, it's not a main, like a mainstream network either. Like, say, NBC, USA, CBS, Fox, ABC, just to name a few, pretty much. So, it's...
So, is USA like said, still guess, over the air? Is it still over the air channel? Because USA used to be a mega channel, similar to CBS, TBS. They were one of the few that were actually still WGN, I believe, and USA.
TNT, I think, was one, too.
Yeah, they were over-the-air airwaves. Right? Is that still USA? Can you get USA without a cable package in your area?
No, you cannot.
Oh, okay. So it has transitioned over. Okay. It's only cable.
It's part of the NBC umbrella, and no, they're only available on cable or whatever.
The only thing The only thing that I have this nitpick with on the streaming services is that when you say, for instance, if you have the Fox Sports app like I do, I can stream anything through Fox as long as connected to my TV provider if I don't subscribe to their special package or whatever, which I'm okay with because, I mean, for the most part, really, if I were to watch anything on the Fox deal, I'm pretty much at home anyway, which obviously my internet is connected through the TV deal. I have Peacock because there are a few things that I like to watch on there. And what kind of things with Peacock and NBC is that NBC kind of picks and chooses which cup races are on Peacock. So it kind of stings in that sense. The other one that also stings, I mentioned it in the... group chat on Thursday night is that I tried ESPN Plus. I mean, I picked it up for SRX, but I just wanted to see what it was like. And it doesn't give you all the ESPN stuff. Like, you have to be connected to the TV provider. If you don't have ESPN with your TV provider, then you're pretty much screwed. That's kind of bogus. And you're only getting ESPN Plus content. So if there's something broadcasting on the main ESPN channel, you don't get it. If there's something broadcasting on ESPN 2, you may or may not. But if it's through ESPN Plus, boom, you got it. ESPN does not have a very good screen package.
So they limit you, like, for your baseball, Sunday Night Baseball and stuff like that. That's not going to be on ESPN Plus. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if you want to say Braves take on the Yankees and they're broadcasting on the main ESPN network, and you have ESPN Plus, you ain't going to get it unless you're connected to your TV provider. Even though you're an ESPN Plus subscriber.
That's garbage. Yeah, more is not always better. More choices does not always lead to the best quality.
So, just going to put this out there for you Reese fans or general public listening along. If you are looking into streaming services, looking into your fine details, or you just say, hey, I want to get it. I mean, I looked into the details, but apparently I didn't look enough.
Yeah, I think my cable bill is somewhere around $250 a month. But I have a phone, I have internet, and I have all the cable package that I need. And that's the sports package, and I don't have any movie packages or nothing like that, but you know, just more than basic cable. I've got like 400-something channels, I guess, to pick from. Best cable that I can get in this area. But, you know, I mean, that's $250 is a lot of people's light bill these days. My light bill, I wish, was $250. But, you know, I mean, that's a lot of money. It really is. And, I don't see, but, you know, by the time you get this streaming service and that streaming service, I mean, I get Peacock for free because I have Comcast, so Xfinity. So, you know, that's one of them. But we also have Amazon. We've got, Flow Racing, I think Hulu. You know, we're caught in the streaming mess as well, y'all. Don't let me lie to you.
Well, see, that's why I won't pay for cable, because I can get everything that I want or need either free or through a streaming service. And so, you know, like I mentioned to Kaz Thursday night, you know, you can – there's ESPN's available on Fubo, Philo, Sling. There might be others out there, but – I've just settled on Sling because that's what works best for me as far as being able to switch back and forth between packages for the, you know, the different parts of the racing season.
Yeah, you're definitely a Slinger. You remember the Sling commercials when they first come out? they were Slingers. Remember? Y'all remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, goodness. But, I mean, it worked for them. They became one of the bigger streaming services. So, good marketing. I think Chaz Taylor has somehow gotten logged out of the okay, there we go. All right, welcome back, Chaz.
The other thing I want to point out with the viewership, too, if you really think about it, is there are people that share – streaming logins or whatever, and you are able to stream the same thing on multiple devices or screens, that could be a problem there too. I don't know if that's really a huge drop or a huge reason of the drop. I want to say that's probably minor, probably very minor.
Yeah, because the only ones that really cracked down on that crap was Netflix. I mean, they were the first. They probably won't be the last. But at least for this point in time right now, it's not that big of a deal with some of the other streaming services. So,
I know
that may or may not be a factor.
I know Dirt Track Digest, when they, during COVID year, when they used to have the package of, I think it was like $9.99 or $19.99 a month, you were able to watch any and all free, or any and all live races, plus their past live broadcasts on their archives. But you could only watch it through one screen, because I tried seeing if I could watch it on, say, computer in my phone at the same time, and just to see if it would work, and no, it does not. So I know DirecTrack Digest is one that does not let you watch the same program on two different screens.
Well, it's the same way as well. I think that you can use the same router, but you can't. You can't like let your dad borrow your Flow Racing account, and y'all both watch it at the same time. I think my son can watch it on one, so he can be in there watching something, you know, dirt related. And I'm in here watching Stafford, right? And it'll let me do that. It'll let me watch Stafford, and my son will be in there watching Lucas Oil. But as soon as you try to let somebody else log in outside of your internet or outside of your, I guess, your Wi-Fi box or whatever it is, it'll cut you out. It won't let you log in. So there are some roadblocks with that. But, you know, I think one of the questions that I felt like that this may have led to discussing this is, did we see a drop-off of viewership, or is it just harder to tally those that are watching it? Do we really feel like it fell off by, you know, 70%, or is 35% of that fall off dictated because of, like, Miss Lee's case, where you're having to go alternate routes in order to watch this series?
That's an interesting question.
I could see that. I mean, if you think, I mean, I don't know how people get away with it and don't get flagged for it, but I have seen one or two YouTube accounts have at least they had this past SRX race full broadcast, minus some of the main commercials or whatever. Like if it was a side-by-side commercial break, those were on, but if it was like complete plain commercial, but you weren't seeing any racing action or what was going on at the track, they cut those out. But like, they put pretty much the whole broadcast on YouTube, and you can watch it for free. I can send you two links for it if y'all want to go back and watch it with no problem.
Right.
That probably could, you know, be a downfall in viewership too. Again, a minor thing.
Well, now, last year with SRX, one thing that I gave them credit for is because it wasn't 2 hours after the race was over with, CBS already had it on YouTube. So you may not have gotten to catch it live, but instead of having to find it on the DVR, I would get home and basically, because, you know, it would come on a lot of times while we were at the dirt track, so I would come home and just watch it on YouTube. It would already be uploaded to YouTube. So I don't know if that's correlating with each other or what, but basically, it was like a two-hour interval from the time that it was played on live network television, and then you could find it on YouTube. So it may have been there live. I don't know, but I know within 2 hours, I was able to watch several races last year when it was on CBS and then converted to YouTube. Okay.
I was just going to say, as far as being able to log in on different devices, I know I can have both my TVs and my computer, all three, on different races, whether it's all from Sling or not. But I also use a VPN, so my IP address is masked, so I don't know if that makes any difference as far as, you know, when people want to share their accounts or not, but just throwing it out there.
Right. So it wasn't just SRX series this week that set the road on fire. It was definitely a Monday race at New Hampshire, where Martin Truex Jr. led 200 and something laps. It was quite the snooze fest. There was action on the racetrack, and as a matter of fact, one of the guys that could actually may have been a challenger for Martin Truex Jr., though it's really hard to say if there ever really was a challenger, was Eric Amarola. And we talked about him in our show last week about maybe being a potential contender for this upcoming race. He was definitely a contender, guys. What is it that Stuart Haas has here at this racetrack Or is it, does it just fit the style of Eric Amarola? You know, how do we fit in that to the downfall and the basic fall-off that we've seen from SHR? Why is this track so important?
So I kind of want to get on you on that one, because we've seen, we obviously in the last few years have seen how Eric Amarola races at New Hampshire, not only with the win that he had 2 years ago, but obviously where he was running up front here yesterday afternoon. Kevin Harvick, as I mentioned earlier, something with low bank track, he's got it going for him. Another one you can pretty much say, and unfortunately didn't have as good of a finish as I thought he would, is Ryan Preece. Being that he's a short, fat guy coming from Connecticut, and Stafford is one of his home tracks. And speaking of Priest and Stafford, he'll be running SRX this Thursday night at
Yay.
Stafford. But anyway, there's something. So I'm thinking that between those three drivers, they're sharing some notes somewhere. To an extent, because obviously each driver wants to go for the win. And while we're talking about SHR, I saw a NASCAR YouTuber interview Kevin Harvick post-race, and was saying how the 10 car, the teammate, you know, broke one of his tires and went into the wall. What are your thoughts on that? And Kevin Harvick's comment was, that's good, and he walked away, like, unprovoked. And I'm like, wow, Harvick really knows where he stands on this. But,
wow.
Like I said, but it didn't seem Kevin Harvick-esque, in my opinion, but I found it kind of funny.
Right. Yeah, so what, FHR obviously has something here in their notebooks that helps them run well at the track, and you know, it's I guess it, maybe there's some correlation between this track and Phoenix. I'm not sure. It is a smaller track, so maybe some of that data rolls over. If they somehow find a car in contention at Phoenix, I doubt that's possible. But definitely, it was good to see SHR make some improvements and have a good run. I believe Chase Briscoe wound up with the top 10 along with Kevin Harvick, and I believe Eric Amarola would have had a top 10 finish, probably a top 5 finish had he not ran into issues. It seems that Penske, you know, Ford once again just doesn't have their stuff together this year of Front Row Motorsports and RFK. I mean, look.
Well, I mean,
if you looked at
yesterday's race, I noticed for a good majority of it, it was basically Ford versus Toyota versus Kyle Larson. That was pretty much the race. Obviously, your Toyotas was basically DGR of Bell, Hamlin, Truex, and then your Fords were, as you mentioned, Chris, Blaney, Logano, the two Penske cars. You mentioned Front Row because of McDowell, who was up there for a good part of that. RFK at towards the end of Brad Keselowski. Chris Buescher luckily avoided the Alex Bowman incident. And I'll give props to Bowman. He saved that car from having a giant disaster.
For sure.
I didn't see the race because I was at work, so I don't have a lot to add.
I mean, it was really one of those races. You didn't miss much.
Well, it was only a matter of time for Truex to be winning at New Hampshire anyway. I mean, he was winless coming in, but it wasn't the first time where he dominated New Hampshire.
Keep telling.
He's he's dominated New Hampshire at least two or three times in the last 2 years. But
right, and always come home the bridesmaid.
Yep, and he just fell short. And this time around, he said, I'm not falling short. This is my year. This is my time. And I know we've said this time and time again, but it really seems like whatever he went through last year on the personal side, and, of course, with the thought of do I retire, do I not, it really had to have played a huge part in his performance, because last, to go from winless and missing the playoffs, which still mind blows me for finishing third or fourth in the regular season. But anyway, missing the playoffs, winless, and to this year, he's now got what, three or four wins?
Three wins, four total. Three wins, four total.
Oh, yeah, the class. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, he's had a turnaround season, and yet he's still, I mean, I'm sure in the back of his mind, it's probably not as strong this year as it probably was last year, but I'm sure, you know, still in the back of his mind, he's still trying to think of, do I go one more year, or do I just, you know, hang it up?
Yeah. I mean, he probably doesn't want to hang it up, obviously, right? But I don't know if his career is actually in his hands or not. I think it's in the hands of Joe Gibbs. But what I am hearing is that Michael McDowell was the driver tag for the 10 car over at SHR, but Front Row Motorsports put up a sign that said, hey, we have an option on McDowell. So McDowell may not be a free agent, and that could, you know, that can obviously open the door for something else to happen or somebody else.
It's funny you mentioned that, because there's a lot of silly season stuff going around, and there's one, and I'm shocked you never commented on this in our chat earlier, but there's a couple silly season things floating around, and obviously Front Row is going to be playing a crucial part in this, right? Because you have McDowell's pull out an option, and it's just a matter of time if Front Row is going to accept his option or decline it or a negotiation role type deal. Obviously Zane Smith has put the feeler out that he wants to go cup racing, which means he's got Front Row in the back pocket. The Front Row try to keep Todd Gilliland in hopes that maybe he's got a little bit more funding so he can run full-time and stay with them. Of course, the question of Eric Almirola and the 10 car, if he's going to be staying, if he's going to be going. I mean, there's also the Harrison Burton deal, who's not really performing in the 21 car. There's a lot of tossing and turning on that, but there could be another possible free agent in the works here, and the reason why I say possible is because nothing's set in stone yet, but Shane Van Gisbergen, your winner from the Chicago Street Course, has put out a feeler that he may be interested in running NASCAR full-time next year, and there have been talking that this season of supercars that he's running could be his last. If he chooses to run NASCAR Cup Series, nothing's been set in stone yet. Obviously, he has discussions between him and his supercars team owner have not come into full circle just yet. And his supercars team owner is not going to hold him back if he so chooses to do that.
Yeah, but if you hired him, Taz, would you put him directly in a cup car, or would you not send him through the minor leagues just like every other driver has to go to? How do you believe that this guy is just capable of jumping in into a 40-race season, 36 races in 40 weeks, and is able to contend on an everyday basis? I mean, sure, he'll be good in some places, road course, maybe a street course, but this guy has zero experience racing the oval. How do we expect that he would be some glorified free agent just because he come in and run and won a road course race? It's not the first time that a road course ringer has you know, lit the world on fire because they were really good at a road course, right? But what do these guys do the moment they get a chance to go out onto the oval? They suck. Christian Filippotti, Dario Franchitti, the list just goes on. Sam Hornets, it took him years, man. Sam Hornets, it took him years, okay? Marcus Ambrose didn't just go cup racing. So, I mean, you know, what SVG did, I think he toots his own horn a little bit too much. If he really honestly believes, you want an embarrassment tour? You want Jimmy Johnson 2.0? Go over and put him into a full-time cup car and see how many seconds off pace he is when he gets to a place to like New Hampshire or like Gateway or even, you know, Pocono, for crying out loud. What are your thoughts on that? Because I think that opened up a can of worms, Taz.
I mean, he could be tuning his own horn. Like I said, nothing's been in full confirmed talks as far as the press is released right now. The team owner of SVG's Supercars ride has said that there's been no discussions as of right now. Obviously, the owner has said that should SVG want to run Cup full-time, he's not going to hold him back. SVG has put out a feeler saying that he may want to, but he may not. Again, nothing's been set in stone, but you have to put that into consideration that there could be possibly another free agent in this work, which makes you sit here and think, where could he go? Should he be declaring running full time for the NASCAR Cup Series? Because you have to sit here and think, could Trackhouse take that Project 91 and make it a full time ride? Only problem is it's an open car, it's not a charter, and they're gonna try to go for a charter. Now I bring charters into this factor because BJ McLeod's team, there is a rule that NASCAR has. If you finish like in the bottom three of the owner's points or something like that for three straight seasons, you could lose. NASCAR could potentially buy your charter because, I mean, you didn't hold your own wager to that. And the one team that's right now struggling to do that is BJ McLeod's team, which that could be, say, Trackhouse's way of getting a charter. And, of course, right now people and teams are saying that they are not selling charters. Like, Spire has put out there that they're not selling charters. I think Front Row has said they're not selling a charter yet. And I do believe there is one or two other teams that put up their comments saying they're not going to sell their charters. If there was somebody, though, that could be willing to sell a charter, I could see it being Rick Ware, but I don't entirely foresee that. Maybe I'm wrong, but
I wouldn't put him in a cup car. Not on the basis of one race. I don't care who you are.
I could maybe see, like, say, for instance, if SVG wanted to run Cup full-time, say, not next year, but maybe in 2 years, I could see someone like Trackhouse try to grab him and put him in, like, maybe not only road courses or street courses, but maybe grab him for an oval race, whether it's a short track, super speedway, shoot, go for the Daytona 500. Why not?
You know, if these guys can figure out that they can add a road course crazy guy from Spain or from New Zealand or from Australia, you're going to see a lot of open cars here in your road course races. And I think that's a good move, right? I mean, there's nothing that pays better than first. So, you know, if you've got a guy that's in an open car that can literally go out there and maybe teach these country boys something, I can see teams taking that risk, right, and seeing, you know, a different strategy being played at these certain road course races as the car fits better to, being able to bring in somebody that to get seat time. But putting SVG as a full-time driver next year in the Cup Series, it would be a disaster, and I think that we could all agree with that at this table.
Yeah, if I were SVG, in my own opinion, I would say take next year of Supercars full-time, but if you are really considering racing full-time Cup Series, you have to get some oval races in, and you may have to talk to some teams to run, say, a few races. Like, yeah, you could run your road course, street course, just to make you feel comfortable, but you have to run some ovals and super speedways. So maybe short tracks, maybe try the Daytona 500. I feel like short tracks may not entirely benefit SVG entirely, only because of the fact, we've seen with SRX that guys that are primarily road course, street course racers do tend to run pretty decently or pretty well at running short tracks because of car control. There's not a lot of straightaway speed. Look at Marco Andretti, Helio Castroneves, just to name a couple. So if I were SVG, I would try a couple races on at least the Daytona 500 and maybe a couple of the your typical cookie cutter mile and a half tracks, because that's where you're gonna sit there and really feel like, is this really what you want to do?
Yeah, you know what SVG should have done? He should have signed up for this RX Series this year. That would have given him more experience and a better upper hand at maybe trying some of this oval racing. But when I say trying some of this oval racing, I am not going to sit here and believe that a Cup owner is going to risk his franchise. You know, Red Bull would have to be paying a whole lot of money, and it's not going to work at Trackhouse because they just signed a multi-year deal with Busch. And you're not going to have Busch and Red Bull in the same stable.
And you notice that Red Bull did not have any sponsorship of his car at Chicago. Red Bull stepped away from NASCAR. They're not going to be quick to jump in just because SVG's going there.
Right, and so that money has to be behind this as well. And, you know, I just don't see there's too many other Cup drivers that are well invested that you take your chance on. Michael McDowell, for crying out loud, I'm sure whatever he's making over at Front Row Motorsports is pennies compared to what Martin Truex Jr. is getting paid. And to be honest with you, if Truex did decide to hang it up, or he goes over and races for his buddy over at Stuart Haas Racing, you know, Michael McDowell, a homecoming to Toyota, putting him into that 19 car over John Hunter Nemechek, I don't know about y'all, man, but that sounds a lot better, a lot better, cooler deal if Michael McDowell, because if I'm not going back home and I'm not going to Toyota Racing to go drive for Joe Gibbs, where my career started at, and through the TRD program, then I'm going to stay right there where I'm at, because you know what? Nobody else has been that successful at Front Row Motorsports, but Michael McDowell had kind of owned ownership into this organization because he has been the stable driver that has allowed this organization to improve over the last several years. Now, I know that David Reagan got a win there. I know Chris Buescher got a win there. But those wins, you know, one was at Pocono, a rain-shortened race. The other was a win at Talladega on a, you know, just a dreadful. I was there at that race. I actually watched the finish from my living room because we just got tired of it. It was cold. It was raining. And there was just no damn way that the race was ever going to get restarted. So we come home, and I got to watch the end of it right here in my living room. It was crazy. David Ragan won that race. It was dark. I mean, it was literally dark outside. But so, you know, what Michael McDowell has done there since he went to front row, I see, you know, everybody talks about loyalty and Kyle Larson, Chip Ganassi. I mean, there's got to be some loyalty between McDowell and Front Row Motorsports, especially knowing Bob Jenkins and Doug Yates. That they take pride into having a guy like Michael McDowell in their organization. Any thoughts on that, Ms. Lee?
Well, I would like to see McDowell in better equipment. I really would, because, you know, look what he's done, like you said, for Front Row. But, yeah, he deserves better equipment. And I think what you're saying about him going back to Toyota where his roots are would be a good thing for him.
Yeah, it's a game of musical chairs. It is, Tessa. What are your thoughts as we play the musical chairs amongst ourselves?
So I'm thinking of a couple things here. I would like to see McDowell take a shot at a top-tier ride, such as SHR. I know the 10 car is going to be more of his likelihood. I mean, is it the best car over at SHR? No. But is it better than what he's getting at Front Row? Probably.
I don't know.
I mean,
he's the third best driver in SHR, but he's the best driver in Front Row.
I mean, I'm with you there, Chris, because it's like SHR is a top team, but at the same time, like, between the 34 and the 10, like, is there really much of a difference? There may be a little bit more, but I don't really know unless you put them in it. And you can't, and like, as the saying goes, can't knock until you try it, right? But if you want to put him more on the Toyota side, I don't see Legacy Motor Club or Motorsports, whatever they're called. I don't see them giving up Gregson or Jones right now. I think both of them are under contract for at least another year, at least. And the only other Toyota option for McDowell at the moment would have to be somewhere in 2311 if Denny Hamlin and Michael Jordan choose to say, see you later, Bubba Wallace. And I don't, with how Bubba brings in sponsorship, I don't see how they're going to cut him out, at least for the young team right now, where sponsorship is key. And unless Truex decides to retire, I don't see McDowell scoring a ride over at JGR because, yeah, there's a Denny Hamlin situation, but honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Joe Gibbs and Denny Hamlin agreed on to some sort of extension. And I wouldn't be surprised if it gets announced within the next, say, month or two.
Well, that's a big question mark right there with Denny Hamlin and Joe Gibbs and what's going to happen. It's also very apparent that 2311 is not as strong of an organization this year as what they were last year. Even though Bubba's had a really good run there for a few weeks, probably the best run that he's had in his entire career. You know, here's Kyle Busch over there at RCR, 3 wins, Tyler Reddick, 0. You know, does he have 1 win? Fowler's got a win. Does Fowler have a win? He does have a win, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's I know Cota, he won for sure. I don't remember if he's won anything else since. I want to say no.
Okay, yeah, okay. So he does have, he has one win. Okay, all right, that's okay. All right. But my argument is, you know, 23-11 hasn't been lighting the world on fire. And Denny Hamlin, there's big questions there with, you know, FedEx. He doesn't want to go out like Jimmy did with the change of sponsor in the 11. If FedEx leaves, he's going to go to 23-11. Bubba Wallace is the big question mark, guys. And by the talk of Denny Hamlin, like, there's no more trying to motivate Bubba to be better than what he is. Bubba is who he is. And I think that Michael Jordan and Denny Hamlin realize that he's never going to be a superstar. He's been given the equipment for 2 years, 3 years. This is his third season. So he's been given the equipment needed to become a superstar, and he's yet to find that. So Bubba is still Bubba. So there could be a change at 23-11. Man, when you're building a $16 million garage, you're going to make changes that make your organization a winning organization, even if that means you moving to that organization and racing your own car. Denny Hamlin could very, very well possibly be in a 23 car his own self in the near future. If, you know, things don't start moving in a upper direction for 23-11. This is silly season, y'all. This is silly season. And there is something that's going to happen in the next couple of weeks that we had no idea that was coming. And it's going to, you know, it's funny that we're at that point of the year now where we can waste almost a whole episode just throwing drivers' names out there and what might happen. One thing we do know is that Chase Elliott is in trouble and Alex Bowman is in trouble. And Alex was able to rebound this past race, if I'm not mistaken, right, Taz? But Chase Elliott, man, I mean, that guy, he looked off the map. Something going on over there in that nine machine, and I wonder if it's self-confidence. You know, we talked about this a couple of years ago when Kyle Larson showed up, and Chase Elliott was no longer going to be the best driver in the organization and how Chase was going to be able to adapt to that. And now that you're seeing the success of Willie B, you're seeing Kyle Larson, Alex Bowman, you know, it's semi. He has to compare himself more to Alex Bowman than he can Willie B, who is on fire. And, of course, Kyle Larson, who could very well be the best driver in the garage. Is Chase in trouble? That's the question. I'll start with you, Ms. Lee.
Absolutely. If he does not get a win, you know, we talked about this a little bit in the chat. You know, he does need to work on stage point. But if he doesn't get a win, and I can't see NASCAR not letting the face into the chase. But at this point in time, man, he's got a big hole to shovel himself out of. So, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the reason is. But, you know, I have my feelings about Bowman. And
right.
And we talked about that a little bit in the chat. And part of that being, you know, him being a little, I'll be generous and say concerned about injuries, because his was a back injury. You know, back injuries are nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
You know, so.
Crippling. They're crippling.
I feel that Bowman is a little bit scared. I don't know what Chase's excuse is. But like I said, I also don't see NASCAR not letting the face miss the chase. So what's going to happen with that?
You know, it kind of goes back, and I don't.
I can tell you what's
going to
happen. I'll tell you what's going to happen. If Chiefs doesn't win in any one of the next five regular season races, come Daytona, they're going to push him like hell, and Chase is going to win that damn thing. You know it.
You really think Kyle Larson is going to help Chase Elliott?
It's going to be team orders, and I'm sure Kyle Larson will be pocketed extra bucks for it.
Nah, if I'm Kyle Larson, there's just no way, man. There's no way. Like, because I already have to beat Willie B. There's no way that I'm going to put the third guy in my organization into the playoffs. There's no way, Dad. Because what if that guy beats me? You see, this is a confidence game. And that's what's wrong with Chase Elliott. It happened to Bill when Bill had his bad wreck and Matt Kenseth got his debut. Do you guys remember that? Do you know that? Matt Kenseth got his NASCAR debut because he stepped into the car that Bill Elliott said, I believe it was the McDonald's car. He slipped at Talladega, broke his hip, and Matt Kenseth made his debut in that car. But Bill Elliott, of course, 2 years went by where he didn't win, and that was in the moment of his injury. So maybe the Elliotts have a hard time dealing with injuries. I don't know. Maybe it's just a mental capacity. But I do know that when he's at an organization where he's supposed to be winning, and he's not winning, and he starts, there's a rubbing of some kind. Look at Dale Jr. If it ain't Dale Jr. written all over again, I don't know what is, right? There it is. Dale Jr. was at the top of his game. He got into a race car that caught on fire, and it completely changed his career, and he lost confidence for 5 to 6 years. And everybody says, well, Chris, he had nothing to do with that fire. Oh, it had plenty to do with that car fire. He had plenty to do with it. Because he was scared. And he lost his confidence in it. And he lost his confidence in himself. And that's how you kill a race car driver. Maybe not necessarily out on the racetrack, but definitely his career. Now, whether or not Chase can overcome that, hey, give him a couple of years to get his mojo back. Kyle Larson's probably not going to stay at Hendrick Motorsports forever. I could be wrong. He could stay just to piss Chase off and Chase leave. I don't know. But eventually, you know, you're going to have these two guys bumping heads, and whether or not, you know, you can – I think the thing that saved Jimmy Johnson and Jeff Gordon was friends with Jimmy Johnson in the beginning. He's the reason why Jimmy Johnson embraced the Hendrick Motorsports. So there was a little bit of a mano over mano. You know, Chase Elliott, he's kind of the spoiled brat of the sport. Kyle Larson, he got kicked out of the sport and had to earn his way back in it by lighting the dirt world on fire. Those two guys are not the same. I don't see Kyle Larson pushing Chase Elliott to no damn win at Daytona. I am sorry to disagree with you, Taz, but I got to bring Miss Lee in on this one. I know she's going to DDT you right now. She ain't falling for it either. Miss Lee, what are your thoughts?
I'm totally with you, Chris. I don't see I don't see Kyle Larson helping Chase.
No, that's fine.
I just don't see it.
Look, he's on the map. He's tapping out. He's tapping out. Taz, don't tap out.
No, I play devil's advocate because I said Chase Elliott's going to get pushed to Daytona if he don't win any one of his five races. Y'all are going to get
perfect world. Yeah, in a perfect world, he would. But you got to think about who Kyle Larson is. If he gets a push, it'll be by Willie B. It won't be by Kyle Larson. I promise. They're probably already arch nemesis in that organization, and it's probably because Kyle was like, "Hey man, Chase, what are you doing?" Chase is like, "Fuck you, Kyle." And there's where a rivalry starts. It happens all the time. I hate it when two best friends go to a racetrack and start racing each other. You know what Darren Dan said before the year's over with? They ain't friends no more. All right, what's next on the agenda? Oh, I believe we have a stat of the day. You want to know the type of butt-whooping that Martin Truex Jr. put down? I tell you what, this stat right here,
will blow your mind. I don't normally give the stat away before we even get there, but man, this is just unreal when you really think about it. Martin Truex Jr. is the most prolific stage racer since the stage format was installed in 2017. Today's two stage wins brings his all-time career high stage wins total to 59. He also has an all-time high 1,943 stage points. In return, Toby Christie posted this. To put it in perspective, the next highest on the NASCAR Cup Series stage win list is Kyle Busch with 47, 12 less than Truex. Busch also holds the second most stage points in Cup history with 1,768, 175 less than Truex. Now, the one thing that is interesting about that stat is both of those drivers have been Toyota drivers since the stage inception. So that's how many stage wins Toyota has put together since 2017. I wonder if that's more that has to do with PRD and the focus on how this game is played, or if that was a genius from the two crew chiefs. That does open up a great question, and I'm going to leave it off with you, Ms. Lee.
Well, and, you know, and this is why, you know, you guys kind of laughed at me, but this is why I said that Chase needs to look at focusing on stage points. Yeah, it's a little late in the season, but that should have been his strategy from the very start.
I agree 1,000, for sure. I agree with that, for sure. He should.
You know, so whether, you know, whether it was a TRD thing or a JGR thing, you know, either way.
Well, Truex had to have been.
They were playing the game right.
Right, and that was Cole Pearn as his crew chief. So, you know, a lot of emphasis was put on Cole Pearn that, you know, he went out and he did. He understood the game that was being, the rules of the game that was being put forth. And, you know, that's, you know, Truex won that championship in dominant fashion. And it's, you know, it was the stage wins that carried him over inside of the playoffs. I think that was in that moment, even in this show, that we realized how important those stage points really were. Like, I remember that coming to Jesus where it was like, wow, these stage points have literally put Martin Truex in a completely different area code. Do you remember that, Dad? I think you've been along this, with this ride long enough to remember that, correct?
I'm trying to think. I think so.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, but if not, it was Jason, man. But either way, you know, there's, I mean, that's just crazy perspective to think that these two drivers have accumulated for over 3,000 stage wins in the last, you know, what, 6 years. So, unreal. Like, Toyota has basically dominated the game, but not necessarily have they dominated in the win category. They've had the stage wins, but not, you know, maybe not capitalized completely on the big win. But I'd like to see those totals put in perspective since 2017 versus other manufacturers. But a very interesting stat, and Ms. Lee, I agree with you 1,000%. That's exactly what Chase needs to do. They're trying to hit a home run. We're thinking you just need to get on base. You can accumulate 50-plus points a race if you just play the stage strategy. And if you wind
up
14th, that's great if you wind up somewhere in the top 15, because you definitely have a car capable of finishing in the top 15. But it's very important. If you got two stage wins and you finish 15th, then you've got basically points as a fifth-place finisher. And I think that's the important game that they're missing over here. They're swinging for the fences. They're wanting the home run. And maybe you'll get that at Watkins Glen or somewhere. But I promise these other racers know how good Chase is there. They're not going to help him get there.
I think there is two races that do favor Chase, and I'm looking specifically at the road courses, which is Indianapolis and Watkins Glen. Daytona, he's not the strongest super speedway racer, although there was the Atlanta deal, but different super speedway versus a Daytona Talladega type thing. Pocono, hey, anything can happen. That's another one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember him being that great at Richmond, and there's also there could also be Michigan, but yeah, I see what
well,
you're saying on the. I see what you're saying on the. On the stage point thing, but I see it as basically you got to put yourself in a must-win type deal at this point. Yeah, you. Yeah,
well, that's exactly it, and that's why I said he should have taken that stage point strategy from the very beginning of the season.
Yes.
Because at this point, it really, it's not going to help him out that much unless he gets a win.
Right.
Right. And, I mean, I see it as with him, like I said, stage points will help. I mean, if he gets the stage win, those playoff points will definitely help even more. But I just see it as he's got to put himself in a race must-win situation because you can't just rely on a good point day yourself. You got to hope that the people ahead of you don't have either as good of a day as you do, or they have ferocious days where they're out of the race early.
Well, either way, without those stage wins, if Chase even gets in the playoffs, he's not going to be a threat because he doesn't have enough ump behind him to get him to the next stages. Unless the guy just comes in and lights the world on fire, and somebody with confidence issues, that's just not going to happen. Maybe he gets a win, but he's not going to turn everything around in the blink of an eye. Now that I've said that, of course, Chase Elliott will go on and win the championship, and I'm going to put my bet in on DraftKings in just a few minutes. Because I have that deep power, so Chase Elliott will go on and win the championship this year just because I said that. But no, I just don't see it happening, guys. And back to the Truex thing, wow, how many stage points? That's how valuable it is. Of course, it's only one in one championship, but it's something that he's working on again this year, and that strategy could very well lead him into another championship as we sit here and question what his plans are for next season. That is unreal, the times that we live in right now. And once again, another week with nothing but storylines, right? I mean, NASCAR is doing one darn thing good, and that's keeping the storylines hot. I think that that's the most successful thing that the NFL does, is they keep people wondering what's going to happen next. Well, you know, even in the off season with the whole the running back saga right now, with all these running backs who are not getting paid and they're getting franchise tagged. That's the story right now, but it's still a story. And NASCAR's been really good over the last few years of keeping the story going week in, week out. You know, there's so much that we can talk about. Because of where racing is and what's going on in it right now. You know, they complain about not having off weeks, but yet, you know, it's really the momentum that gets you through, and you don't have an NFL season where you have 2 weeks off and no NFL games. No, there's always something playing, and I think NASCAR gets it, and that's kind of how we've got this momentum and storylines week in, week out. We have something cool to really talk about and bring to the table.
Absolutely. Even if it's silly season speculation, there is always something to talk about.
Right. One thing we have not talked about was the Xfinity race. Now, I was, of course, on vacation. I was in the mountains. I don't really remember two laps of it. The TV was absolutely terrible. It was fuzzy. I couldn't really see the cars. And I think I eventually just left the hotel room and went and found something to do. So I didn't really watch the Xfinity race. I do believe that John Hunter Nemechek was the winner. Were you guys able to watch that, or did you both miss it as well?
Yeah, I didn't catch much of it, but I have to share a funny, because John Hunter Nemechek won the week before, and he was interviewed on Race Hub. And as they concluded the interview, John Hunter said, Well, maybe I'll see y'all next week when I win at New Hampshire. And what did he do?
Oh, wow.
He won at New Hampshire.
Wow.
So that's how confident he was going in.
That's pretty cool.
And by the way, he said the next time he'll be on Race Hub is Pocono, so we'll see what happens.
No. Well, we definitely know that that 20 car has always been hooked up, and I'm sure that he has a lot of skill. Of course, Harrison Burton, I believe, was the least successful driver in the 20 car in the Xfinity Series, so and he's probably been one of the least successful of the Toyota development drivers, as we've seen him now 3 years in the Cup Series. So 2 years in the Cup Series. But now I've heard that his seat is secure for next year, so don't expect any changes there in the 21 team. But back to the Xfinity Series side, John Hunter did put a yard whooping on everybody. Anything else that kind of comes from that race, Taz? Did you get to see it?
I did not get to catch anything of the Xfinity race, so I don't really have much input.
But, so I guess that's going to open the door for, well, let's quick talk. RFK, Brad Keselowski. This is real, y'all. This is real. Like, this is real. Brad Keselowski has brought RFK, Roush Fenway Racing, back from the dead. I don't know what's going on over at the Rick Ware race cars, but you had Cole Custer in one car and Ryan Newman in another. I'm not sure if those are developmental cars that Ford is feeding information from, but it is crazy the talent that's in those two cars at Rick Ware Racing. They're not getting much publicity for it. But what RFK has done and just the weekend, look, Brad Keselowski is going to win. Like Chris Buescher, he's going to win. You don't get top fives and just fall off all of a sudden. These guys are headed in the right direction. And I think that anybody that doesn't see it, that the RFK right now is probably the best Ford in the field. They're crazy. Kudos to making the show again. Like, I have a feeling maybe there'll be a one-off somewhere, and they probably won't run good. It could be Pocono this week. I don't know. Buescher has a win at Pocono. I don't know what Keselowski's bred in his career at Pocono, but it would be interesting to see the stats. But when we come up to a place like Michigan, Brad Keselowski's home track, I guarantee you he has circled that racetrack on his piece of paper and says, this is where I want to get, because you're doing it in front of Ford, man. You're doing it in front of Ford, and you're doing it in Michigan. And, I mean, you just got me excited. I mean, my gosh. I mean, Brad Keselowski, RFK Racing. People have laughed at Brad Keselowski his whole career, made fun of how he looks and all. I mean, the guy, he's the most patriotic driver out there. He's, a great father. You see the father figure that he is to his children. He has manufacturing companies that he's bought into and built from scratch. Basically built from scratch. So he has this future that's already, been solidified outside of racing. And he's a team owner. So he's bringing an organization that was at rock bottom and making them ultra competitive week in, week out. If I can't get a standing ovation to what Brad Keselowski has done over at RFK Racing, I don't think that we should do any standing ovation.
Brad's a smart guy. You know, he's diversified in ways that ensure that he will be involved in racing for many years to come. And I'm surprised he hasn't won a race yet. But yeah, I agree. Before the end of the year, Brad, or you know, before the playoffs come, I do believe Brad will win a race. And he has definitely elevated RFK, and I think he was a good addition. He's a good teammate for Chris Buescher. You know, I've always liked Chris Buescher. I admired him from his Xfinity days, and I think that he and Brad work very well together.
I agree. Brad.
I think with RFK, they're obviously going in the right direction. I think Brad is doing better as an owner this time around versus when he had his own truck team. I think Roush has pretty much given him kind of the foundation. Didn't really say give him keys to the entire organization, but kind of, you know, got his feet wet, giving him good direction to point in. Obviously, Brad not only wants to better not only himself towards the end of his career, but he also wants to put the organization on the map. And he definitely wants to see Chris Buescher basically carry the flagship of – be the flagship driver of that organization. Because Brad has mentioned time and time again that Chris Buescher has the talent, but you got to give him the equipment. You got to give him the faith, the belief in him. And Brad has been – I don't want to say the only driver, but probably one of the very few drivers in that garage – that sees it and is really pushing him. And if you remember me mentioning last week post Atlanta, I do believe because Brad has such high hopes for Buescher, I think Buescher became a better super speedway racer because he's learning from Brad. I mean, I've said time and time again in super speedway races, Brad is a guy that shows up to those playing. He is playing chess in a checkers game. And you can't say I'm wrong because look at the success he's had at Super Speedway races.
Right.
He's won at Daytona. He's won at Talladega. He's been knocking
on
the
door being the winningest. He's been knocking on the door being the winningest driver ever at Talladega. But let that sink in. One more win away, and he has topped Dale Earnhardt and Dale Jr.'s record. That's unreal.
And I'm just gonna throw this into the mix. Look at what Brad did for Joey Logano.
Amen, Miss Lee.
He advocated to get Joey at Penske, and he worked with him. And look what's happened to Joey since he left JGR.
And Logano,
you know?
And now that Brad's left Penske, Logano is the flagship guy of Penske now instead of Brad.
Right. So Brad helped groom him for that position. So what does that tell you about Brad and his vision is for racing, for NASCAR in general. So Brad's forward thinking in investing in RFK, like I said, it positions him for a great future going forward with the sport. And he is a great mentor.
I mean, I just feel like that win, when it comes, the sport itself needs to celebrate. And I hope it comes at Michigan. I really do. I want it to come this weekend at Pocono. But I would love to see that come in Michigan, just so he could look up there in that tower and see Ethel Ford and give him a kiss, a blow kiss, and ride that American flag backwards around the racetrack as he's done so many times before. You know, Brad Keselowski loves the sport of racing. He's an ambassador for the sport, as you said, Miss Lee. He has an eye talent in the sport, and he has an eye fixing things and making things better. There's only a few people that hold that type of character, that hold that type of charisma. And
exactly.
Very few times
and
do you see failure from those type of people. They are a golden goose.
And, you know, Gibbs is worried about where their organization is going in the future, and we've questioned that as well. But Keselowski is going to join the names of Roush, Ganassi, Stuart Haas. He's going to be one of the guys that keeps propelling this sport forward.
But I can agree with that, too. I can. Definitely. For an organization that was dumb and broke is basically what I felt like Roush was, because the fall-off happened so fast. Like, we thought, wow, this went from a five-team organization. They lose Matt Kenseth. Then they lose Carl Edwards, and Greg Biffle never goes anywhere again.
Mark.
Never races anywhere else. Mark Martin, of course. You know, Mark, I think that was kind of, you know, Roush was not even at their peak yet when Mark Martin left. Mark Martin kind of paved the way for what Carl Edwards and Kenseth and them were able to do. I believe Mark left in 06 or 07. You know, Kenseth, I guess, you know, he was probably the oldest man in the stable at the time. But that was a completely different gig, because Robbie Reiser kind of ran that team, not really Jack Roush. They were under the stable of Roush Racing, but Matt Kenseth's team was really run by the guy who got him in the sport, and that was Robbie Reiser. So, you know, how that may have affected Mark Martin as well, you know, I don't know. Kenseth won a championship in 2003. Mark Martin never won a championship. Kurt Busch won in 2004. Mark Martin never won a championship. Maybe a lot of that had to do with the exit. But that's kind of like where I believe, you know, they turned into this, you know, powerhouse organization. They had five cup cars. They had dominating, at the time, nationwide series, Busch Series teams. Dominating truck series teams. And then next thing you know, just within a few years, they're down to two drivers and wrecking race cars every week and not performing. So where they were then and where they are now, I think that, you know, it is time to celebrate the success of Brad Keselowski and what he's been able to bring to RFK and get that organization turned around. Like, it took more than money. It took somebody who knew how to get the best out of every single employee, and I believe that's what Keselowski brought to the table when he invested into RFK. Now, Taz Taylor, it's about your time to shine. Of course, this is going to be the segment where we go into Taz's hot picks. Taz will tell us who to watch, and I'm interested to see where he has set his favorites at going into this week, because Pocono, well, we don't really race there much anymore, and it's its own kind of racetrack. It's the no fourth corner racetrack. It's kind of unique in its own character, but it's a very large racetrack. But if you don't necessarily think of it as a drafting racetrack either. How were you able to figure out this week who your favorites are, Taz? And I'll let you take it from here.
So I've looked at – obviously I look at stats. And I've also kind of looked – so I've kind of looked into, you know, who's got a good amount of wins at this track. Then I kind of looked at average finishes, that type of deal. And then, of course, where have they been performing for the year, this year specifically? So when I look at that, I have listed as my favorites for Pocono, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, and William Byron. And I'll get to William Byron in a minute because I know there's probably going to be question marks about that one. Contenders, I have Kevin Harvick, Joey Logano, and Alex Bowman. And for underdogs, I have Eric Almirola, Bubba Wallace, and Chris Buescher. Now, the reason why I have Byron in the list of favorites, yes, he's had one heck of a stellar year so far this year, but his average finish at Pocono is a 9.4, which is the best of all current Cup drivers. He may be winless, but in 9 starts, he has 2 top 5s and 5 top 10s with 1 pole and has led 70 laps. And let me get you a refresher here. His average start is a 16.3, so he's starting mid-pack, but finishing right around the top 10 at Pocono.
Did you mention
Hamlin? Yes, I have Hamlin. Hamlin has 6 wins at Pocono to go along with 14 top 5s, 21 top 10s. There is a couple drivers we can pinpoint as favorites, contenders, underdogs, pools open.
So the top 3 drivers of success, who are they? Besides Hamlin, of course.
Kyle Busch, who has 4 wins to his name. And then, of course, as I mentioned, William Byron. Yes, he's winless, but he is finishing around the top 10 despite starting around mid-pack.
All right, what about Larson?
Larson also winless, 11.0 average finish, starting right around there, 5 top 5s, 9 top 10s.
So I'd like to see Elliott's stats at this chase, because
Elliott
that'll kind
has,
of tell the tale of where Hendrick is.
So Chase Elliott, his average start and finish kind of mirror each other, around 14th. He has 1 win, 4 top 5s, and 8 top 10s.
So this is more of a Toyota-dominant racetrack, I believe. But Truex doesn't have he's not very good at bigger speedway races. We've seen that over the years.
He does have 2 wins here, though.
Truex does have 2 wins. Okay, yeah. I'll shut my mouth. There you go. I'm counting 8 wins already now with Toyota. So obviously this is a Toyota dominant racetrack. That puts Christopher Bell. What does Christopher Bell look like here? Obviously his stats are very few. Maybe the Olympics the last time we raced here twice. So. I'm not even sure if Christopher Bell was a full-time driver at that time. What are his stats?
2 top 5s, 2 top 10s, and a 19.2 average finish.
Yes,
and I know we only
have
a few minutes
left,
so.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to put Ty Gibbs somewhere in there, right? We see a lot of guys that can – you don't expect to be – contenders, winners at Pocono. So obviously, this has a lot to do with manufacturer. Ty Gibbs, man. I mean, you have to make a serious pull for this kid. He seems to have matured a lot since last year. This is probably a racetrack that could be in his favor here.
I will
Bubba Wallace. I think he has.
Yeah, Bubba Wallace is in the underdog category. I just threw Ty Gibbs in there. Two favorites I do want to put in there. Being that one is a Ford and the other is a Toyota. The Toyota I'm throwing in. Yes, I'm going to throw in Ryan Blaney is the Ford. Yes, he has one win there. And his average finish and his average start is right around the common 13-14 mark. But the thing with Ryan Blaney that I'm noticing in the last few races is that he's consistently staying up front. He's not in one of those positions where he's running up front and then he just falls off, like last year.
Yeah. I think I had Logano last year. I picked him to win.
I'm thinking Blaine and looking at a track like Pocono, I think this favors Ryan Blaney in the sense that in unique races, unique tracks, it kind of fits into his wheelhouse. I feel like Ryan Blaney just does well in this type of situation. Truex, with the way he's been this year, I mean, in 33 starts, yes, he has two wins, but his top 10, he's sitting 14th. He's got 14 top 10s to go along with 6 top 5s. I mean, but again, with the wave riding he's on right now, you can't ignore it.
Let's pull up Kevin Harvick's stats real quick. Because I'm getting a feeling from SHR. I'm feeling like a Chase Briscoe may have had some success here, possibly Kevin Harvick over the last couple of years. What's Harvick's stats?
Harvick in 43 Pocono races, only one single win, 15 top 5, 22 top 10, 12.1 average finish.
Okay, he's a little bit better than the rest, and that's a lot of stats.
Right, that's a lot of
stats. But I'm putting him as a contender because, I mean, SHR as a whole is just not there. Harvick finally broke his top 10 streak, or his not finishing the top 10 streak at New Hampshire. I think it was for like 6 or 7 races straight. He did not finish the top 10 before New Hampshire. I want him to win at least once before he calls it a career, but right now it's just hard because SHR is just not performing.
Yeah. But I feel like there's going to be a whole lot of cheating going on between now and the last 5 races because if you're going to cheat, now's going to be the time. If you're going to put something in that car that you probably shouldn't have in there, now would be the time to do it. So if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. I'm going to go back to the old rule of the way. I believe SHR is going to dig deep into that little mystery box and see if they can't find something that's going to make them a little bit faster. But I did want to check out Brad Keselowski's stats real quick because this may be the week that it happens. I want to know what his stats are there. And we have to put him and Buescher in some kind of category here. Because
all
if
right,
not,
so,
you're just ignoring the fact that RFK is doing what they're doing.
So, Buescher, I have as an underdog. Brad is 1 win, 11 top 5, 15 top 10s, and 25 Pocono races for a 10.7 average finish.
10.7, the best I've heard yet.
William Byron topped him,
wow.
And that's the only driver.
Wow. Definitely.
I will put Brad as a contender easily. Being that our favorites list is pretty much full. Another contender I kind of want to throw in there. Oddly enough, would probably be Christopher Bell. I mean, I know this is not his track, but he's having he's having a pretty decent season. And as for Buescher, I have thrown him in the underdog category only because, he only has 1 win and 2 top 10s to follow it.
Kyle Busch.
He's a favorite.
Yeah, he should be.
All
right.
I'm going to throw in one more underdog, and that's going to be A.J. Allmendinger. He does have two top tens here, and this is a wild card type of track. If a common winner does not win here, it's somebody wild that you would never think.
I can see somebody swinging for the fences here. That's why I can see Haas backing into a win. Or I could see, possibly a rain-shortened race that we've seen before. Definitely all these things are going to be played. This probably is going to be a certain manufacturer race, or it's going to be a team race, as in you're going to see maybe RCR run really, really well here. You're going to see the Ford Saints.
Did we talk about Reddick at all?
No, Tyler was not mentioned, but, I'm not – this is probably a racetrack that doesn't really fit Tyler Reddick and his driving. But, look at the stats. What does the stats say, Chad?
One top five, two top tens, and five starts for a 17.4 average start and finish.
Well, not bad, I guess. He doesn't get nowhere near the track time at Pocono that some of these other drivers get in their career.
Your real contenders, for the most part, stat-wise, are their average finish is commonly sitting anywhere between 11th through 15th. Anything above that, obviously, you made something work at Pocono. Anything below that, you kind of not really done the job.
Yeah, the one thing that I know of Pocono the most is the guy who won it the first time, was probably going to be close to winning it again the second time. So there was always something about Pocono that somebody had and figured out. And then, it's just who's got that figured out. Rolling into this week. Ross Chastain was not mentioned, and I don't believe Daniel Suarez was mentioned either. If Trackhouse is going to be a powerhouse, we have to figure out where Suarez is in this powerhouse, because Suarez is not living, Monica is not living to expectations, and I think that they need to get that turned around quickly, because
and I'm not saying this is my pick, but I will say I would not be surprised if he is somebody's pick this week. Ross Chastain has no top fives and no top tens for an average finish of 29.7. Daniel Suarez has a different story. Daniel Suarez in 11 races has hit two top fives, four top tens, and 11 Pocono races for a 15.0 average finish. So, I said, I'm not saying that's my pick. However, I would not be surprised if somebody wants to put in a little sleeper, and that's him, and that is him right there.
Right, for sure. All right, well, what's your SRX picks? We're 5 minutes overdue, man. Who's going to win SRX this week?
All right, so for SRX, there's a couple drivers I'm eyeballing here. Obviously, we're not Thunder Road, so we're at Stafford again. I am looking specifically at Ryan Newman. Yes, he won Stafford last year. Had the race not finished under rain, I think he would have had something for Hamlin and probably could have won it. Don't count out Marco Andretti. He did lead some laps last week. Don't count out Bobby Labonte, who's led a number of laps at Stafford in the last 2 years. Don't look too far of Greg Biffle either. The Biff is running Stafford this week. Biffle has won a heat race at Stafford in year one, and he said that one of the short tracks that's close to home for him is similar to Stafford. And I'm going to mention this guy's name. He knows he's run a lot of laps at Stafford, probably not as much as Doug Kobe, but he's run a number of laps here, and he's won multiple times at this track, Ryan Preece.
Preece would have to be my favorite.
Preece.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have to be my favorite. But Ryan Newman is a good argument as well. And the little piece that they had online about how he won and it really just brought him out of the dumps and stuff. I mean, that was, you know, I remembered a similar story with Jerry Nader, and he didn't get that chance to win again. So just to see Ryan light up in that quick little thing that they did where, you know, talked about him walking out of the hospital and stuff with his girls, and then, you know, the SRX series is the first place that he's actually able to feel that win again. It really changed a lot of things, a lot of my views with Ryan Newman. It kind of made me, I was never a big fan of the Rocket Man, so I guess that kind of made me a fan with the way that was written there. But good luck Thursday night. We'll be on the chat side, probably talking about it. Looking forward to it. That's only two nights away. I like that, man. I like kicking off the weekend with a race, man. I think that a lot of fans should get on board here because it's really a short season, and I don't want to miss any of it. So I'll be tuning in regardless. Hope that y'all are too. Let's cut this thing out of here and get to the house.
All right, I want to thank everyone for listening along to Race Chat Live here on Blog Talk Radio. If you ever miss us live, you can catch us on any form of podcast such as Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, RSS feed, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, GeoSaver, Podcast Addict, Deezer, Podchaser, and on YouTube. Speaking of YouTube, if you go to the 110 Nation Sports YouTube channel, go and subscribe to that channel. I know as of lately the content has been on the slower side, but I'm sure in the next few weeks, content will be picking right back up. And also, don't forget to go to the 110 Nation Sports Network website, the 110 Nation Sports Network.com, I believe it is. That's where you'll see links to our past shows, links to where we are podcast-wise, and much more in terms of blogs, storylines, and much more. Thank you to our sponsors that make the 110 Nation roll, Bears Bullish Market, Carolina Sports Plus, TNT Designs, Yellow Caution Flag Productions, and more to Music, Karaoke, and Entertainment. Thank you guys for listening on to Race Chat Live. We'll see you in same bat time, same bat place next Tuesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. This has been the Caution Flag of Racing Radio. Chris Creighton, the Mama Bear, the 110 Nation, Lee Reed. I'm the Tasmanian Devil Flagger, Taz Taylor. Saying good night.
Taz, before you go, I got something to tell you. I'm 4 points away from you, buddy.
I
got you in my sight.
don't you worry.
Don't pull no shimmy. Don't pull no shimmy on me now. Huh? This is getting tight.
Don't you worry. I have picks on top of picks on top of picks. Don't you worry.
All right. Good night, y'all.
Night, everybody.
Good night, Leslie.